SO 21 Radio Laura. You hear my dog in my neighborhood? Yes. So you see, I'm not in Zurich. I'm here in the combination space in Valbellino, in the Ticino. Practice, work on my stuff, and do this radio show. I'm happy to present you tonight the interview in the exhibition which I made last year in Wonderland in New Orleans. I met Leslie Claire Spielmann. She is a curator in New Orleans. We were just talking about my exhibition which I did in New Orleans, and I'm very happy right now that I can say that the 25th of August in the Kunstraum Aarau, I will present this exhibition again here in Switzerland. Thank you so much for being on this channel, this unique channel of Radio Laura in Zurich. We need radios like that, and I'm proud to be a part since many years of this channel in the Sahara of Spotify. Enjoy.
Hey y'all, welcome everybody. My name is Leslie Claire Spielmann. You all know Simon. I'm really excited to have this brief conversation with him. I'm a huge music fan, and that's primarily how I know Simon. But I'm also a curator and a gallerist in New Orleans for about 20 years, and super thrilled at this idea of this visual art practice that Simon has emerging. And so that's what we're going to talk about. I was hoping that we could start by you sharing with folks the 10-day experience in Italy and what you created there, as it sort of birthed what we're going to see here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So the situation, I had the last show here at the Friday the 13th in the sidebar. And it was a super emotional thing. And then I won't finally to stay here, but it was, you know, a calling from the Swiss comeback. And so, and I was stranded some kind in the Swiss Alps in an old chocolate company. And I enjoyed so much the silence in the Swiss Alps. There were no planes, there were no traffic, it was insane. And I made so many recordings, field recordings, with stones but my computer died. After 1.5 years of all my recordings, everything, the backup CD, everything I lost. And during this time, I was heating in this really small house, you know, and I start to make also visual arts, and suddenly I was sitting there and lost this 1.5 years of recordings and editing, and just I was watching the walls and I said, okay, this is what I have. And next door there's this huge old company which I'm also a member of the art institution, and I asked them, hey, can I make an exhibition? And it was just out of this COVID thing, and then losing also all digital data, to say, okay, I want to make something real. Mm-hmm. And so I renovated a huge old belt company and start to hang my pictures, you know, and was very nervous because, you know, as a drummer, you don't know this art business. And but it was from beginning, it's also very strong influence by New Orleans impact, social impact of music and art, to invite other artists to show them my art and how they react to my art. So I invited writers, other musicians, dancers, performers, and I made out of this trash of this company a kitchen. And the people came up to the mountains, and the first thing what they get is a glass of wine and some scissors, and they had to cut vegetables, and we were cooking together, and then we had this performance, and then I open all time every day with this recording which you are listening right now, which I made in Iceland. I was 6 weeks alone, and then I made this recording with Skúli Sverrisson, and this was the opening of this performance all time. It was an old cave, and there were just a loudspeaker which I put the paper on it and a little bit of graphite and a stone, and then I played the record and the stone was jumping. And this is what you see on this table. And the first time I really invest also to say, okay, I don't make an NFT, I make a single-cutted, very expensive record. So every record was $170 just to cut. So there were one guy in the studio to had to listen 1 hour to make these records. Mm-hmm. So it's absolute opposite of our digital spread out. Because I thought, no, NFT I make real. So there are just 10 records, 5 are sold, these 5 are for sale. So
I think it's so interesting because you call them drawings, but the way that you make them, it's almost like a print, like a mono print.
Yeah, I'm very happy that you say what it is. You know?
Yeah. I thought it was interesting when we spoke the other day, you know, you expressed that people love to put people in boxes, right? This mm-hmm. sort of that they can understand. And it's funny because every artist I know, right, is doing a million things. Like, no artist does one thing. They work with lots of different media, and most of them write or make music or take pictures. And I'm interested how you would describe yourself as an artist, and is there like a hierarchy, right, of the media that is obviously resonates most with you, starts with music, but do you consider yourself now also a visual artist?
I'm a trans in this way. So for sure.
Transdisciplinary.
Yeah, yeah. And I say the joke is all the time, we were all the students in the fine arts transdisciplinarity department. We had all time this joke, we are trans. But the foundation, I think it's vibration. Mm-hmm. So it's the swinging. And this is also perhaps a reason I came to New Orleans. Something brought me here, and I slept at Justin Peake's house in the second floor, and if the trash, big trash truck drives by, so the house is shaking, it's not vibrating. Mm-hmm. And this is one of really, really fundamental experience as a Swiss granite boy coming to New Orleans, and it's shaking, you know. And this mm-hmm. happened also to my body finally through the rhythms which I played as a 12 years old boy, the Swiss soldier, you know, and I felt all the and I'm so thankful to find my, I'm okay, I feel okay. I play different here than in Switzerland, I realized.
Well, that was one of my questions, because you also touched on our conversation about New Orleans and how it's sort of informed what you've done, and New Orleans is often so transformative for creative people who come here. So beyond the shaking house, what is it about New Orleans, and what is it that it does for your practice that's different and in other places? And then also, if you could speak a little bit about what it's like to be an artist in New Orleans versus Switzerland, because I know there's a lot of resources and support there that mm-hmm. might not exist here.
So first of all, I think the freedom and I don't feel to be in a box or in a cave. I feel free, you know. I feel the energy of the, and social thing, you know, that this event, an example, is a very nice experience. This is also possible in Switzerland or Berlin. But the thinking is perhaps different, especially in Switzerland, you know, which you have to plan everything. No, Germany too, you know, you have to plan everything, and it's not so spontaneous. Mm. The other hand is that it's very nice if you learn as an artist to write the grand. Mm. This is also a practice, and I realized this in America. The people are just not also used to write the grants, yeah. And you know, and this is also a practice. And I know this the same thing, in example, in Europe, in Romania, they have a huge support from the government, from the European government, and they get a lot of money for cultural support. Mm. And the Romanian artists, they tell me, we never get the money because we don't know how to write the grant.
Right.
So it means we have to educate the artists that they, first of all, they have to fight for, and they have to learn how you can ask for a grant, you know? Because, and it's, I was really struggling a lot with that also. They said, I'm an artist, I need a curator, and you will find me so cool, you know, that I get fundings and stuff. And no, it's fucking brutal work, you know? And yeah, I think the wonderful thing is to swing between, you know?
Mm.
And also to share this, you know, to get the inspiration from New Orleans, an example, or Indonesia, whatever, and then also to inspire the other artists in my knowing. So this is exchange. That's it.
Well, it's interesting you say that, because that leads me into my next question. I mean, I've seen you perform a lot, and a good number of times solo, but for the most part, you're this compulsive collaborator, also very much like a lot of the artists that I know. I was hoping you could talk a little bit about how important collaboration is in your process, in your practice.
First of all, I think it was just collaborations. You know, I just played in bands.
Mm.
And then during many years, especially the Stones, it was a lot of crisis also, you know. I was, during my master thesis, my father died, and it was a very schizophrenic situation. I got very successful in this way that I played in nice spots and get my solo released first, you know. But on the other hand, my relationship went over, and my father died, and so it was really so. And this leads me to work on myself also, and I know my sound, and question who I am and who I sound. And I have my own drum school, and I say to my students, you are what you are, you sound as you are, you know. But then suddenly I realized, okay, perhaps I should say that to myself.
Mm.
So
I don't know a lot about your, like, young Simon's musical exploits, but your work is so experimental. And, you know, has it gotten, I assume, gradually more so as you've gone on and you've gotten older? I mean, it's gotten weirder and more out there, and which is so wonderful. What's that journey been like, and how much further do you think you can go?
It's funny, the experimental thing, it was the beginning. I was 6 years old and had to make homework.
Mm.
And I had to make a sky in blue, you know. I remember this moment very good. So I was sitting there, and I had this lamp, and with the strings, you know, this feather, you know, it's holding the... So I start to touch them, and they sound so great. So I remember very good this feeling to... not making my homework, but I was so fascinated about this sound. So this is finally the beginning of experiment, and mm-hmm. this kept me all the time. And then I had the chance that my brother is older, he listened to Jimi Hendrix and also Freaky Sounds, and yeah, that's the older brother, you know. And then I was studying, I had a French teacher, he was playing with Irin Schweitzer, a very famous Swiss improviser. And I was 19, and this professor asked me to improvise with him. And then we went the first time on a Swiss tour as improviser. And at the same time, I was playing punk and funk and jazz. So it was all time then a parallel thing between mm-hmm. to be accepted in the public, but finally all time improvised.
So you were always... exploring
yeah.
with noise
yeah, yeah, yeah.
and
I remember yeah. very good. There were 6 o'clock in the morning on the Swiss train station, which we were 7 improvisers with piano, drums, and we, you know, the train tracks in Switzerland are really full in the morning, so we played music, and all the people come out, and we had, it was almost fights on, you know, and some people were so fascinated about, you know, and other people no coffee in the head, and then you have this noise, and so yeah, there was a deep impact.
It's interesting because abstract artists, you know, the best abstract artists, and like people who make work that's so out there, there's this like really intense, usually traditional foundation that's really solid. And that's so fascinating that you were like, you built the foundation, but you did it simultaneously while also being wildly experimental, which is really special, I think, and different. So just like collaboration and experimentation, improvisation seems to be a really important part of your practice, and the part for me personally that is so impressive, because it just sort of off the cuff and improvised way of making work is such a unique and special ability. Have you always been drawn to improvisation, and do you prefer that more than sort of really sort of conceptualized work or work that starts off with an intention?
In general, I think it's to be in the moment, just that, listen and to be and not thinking. And I try to practice that. And finally, in this way, it's gotten to me really a spiritual thing, finally. Hmm. And I stopped in this way to meditate, because I realized if I really practice, if I practice drums, the stones, I'm just in the moment. And then I have really no thinking. I have the electronics. Mm. I'm so busy that I have no time to think about my mama or whatever, you know. So this is, and I think, yeah, it relaxes me also, you know. That's my work, you know, which I try to do my best. And as more as I can let go, for sure not everything is good, but then it's that's the very interesting part with the visual art, that I make these pictures and then I hang it to the wall and I watch it, and then suddenly you see, okay, this is wrong, that's right, and so on. And this is a very, very nice work right now, what I'm doing right now in Berlin especially, just to watch my sounds, and then I watch my sound. Yeah. It's also what I'm doing tonight, you know, that I think about what was this drawing, what sound was that, and what it means to me. And then it's very interesting to bring this drawing to the public, what people think about. And it's a lot of very, very, I'm very unsure and very, very shy, you know, to say, but for me it's shock the gut, you know, dan ganz go. Mm-hmm. And so the performance which I do at 8 in the Happy Land, this is the second time I do this, that I play on paper, and the two dancers, Michelle, Paul and Emily, they will pull paper, 100 meter papers, and play the paper and I watch the dancers. And so it's a reflection about notation, improvisation, reading, and yeah.
What compelled you to frame the work and present the work? If you don't see yourself necessarily as a visual artist, what informed the decision to spend a bunch of money on framing and present the work in a more traditional way? I mean, this still isn't a traditional art exhibit. You said to me the other day, I can't just show art. I gotta do something else too, which I thought was really funny, because you can just show art. But what compelled you to formalize that part of your practice in that way? And does that feel good, seeing these objects so polished and beautiful?
I think honestly, I say that right now in public, honestly, it's some kind of also a therapy. So that I frame something which I just made, you know. I was not, I'm Catholic grow up, so you have to suffer, you know, you make it 10 times and even better, you know. And so right now I just make fuck on and then it's made, you know. Mm-hmm. And that I can accept that I'm enough, I'm okay. That's what it is. And I think this leads me also to my school and to the general thing in this world, you know, that we just have to accept each other as we are. Mm. And it's true. And even if it's perhaps strange or wrong, whatever, you know, but it's, first of all, it is what it is, you know. And to accept this, I think this is my way or my process which I am in. And it was very healing, finally, to spend also money and energy also talks with curators or with specialists, they are in framing, you know, they say, do this, because they know the market, they know this world, you know. And I was really freaking out. And this was also for me a sign against this whole NFT digitalizing world, which I say, I play here 5 stones and they are absolutely original. You don't find a fucking other stone. It's this stone. And this stone is not complaining that he has perhaps a bad angle, you know? It's just a stone, you know? And these stones, they lead me extremely in this way, finally, you know? And it's very interesting to understand also walking through the French Alps or Iceland or and you walk around and suddenly you find the stone is sounding good, that they sound similar but all different, you know, and they sound in harmony. And that's so fascinating. So again, it leads me to certain kind of spiritual things. But it's not esoteric, you know, it's just, but I start to realize as more as I am in the nature that and play with the nature, it calms me down and helps me to accept how I am and what I do. You know?
So you were experimenting as early as 6 years old with making sound. When did the stones pop up? When did that become, do you remember the first time?
I was in the holidays about 15 years in the French Alps and not thinking about sound at all. I was exhausted driving home about 2,200 meters and suddenly Steve Reich was under my wheels. And they were very thin slate stones, 220 million years old. Oh. And so I just took 30 kilos and took them to Switzerland, and next year there is a sound installation with 5 plastic bottles, water bottles, they drop on 5 stones and they make super complex beats. And so that was the beginning that I started to play water and stones, and then I built my first instrument. And so right now these stones, they were really all over the world, so it was super nice to play with John Vidakovic stones. And John Vidakovic, I was tearing up. And
it's interesting juxtaposition of this like very ancient, way ancient material and this completely new innovative experimental thing. It's just really fascinating. I thought it was also interesting when we were talking about also, like most artists, you're not motivated really by money. And even talking about selling your work and all of that, I mean, that's nice, but it's not what motivates you. And so I'm interested, as an artist, how do you measure success if it isn't with money? How do you measure it?
I think, in terms of and attention, community, being together, somebody listen to you, you know. And there's I played once with Bettina Boulder. She's a very famous violin player, and she played in the Cargany Hall solo and sold out, and she told me the best show she had, she was in a hospital playing for a man who was dying. So this was, I think, that, you know, so happened. A good example is also the Sidebar. We had so good experiences at the Sidebar for perhaps 5 people.
It was magic. It was magic every time. Yeah.
So, and for sure, I think if it would be all time like that, it's also sad, you know. It's sometimes really cool to be the rock star, you know. And sure. That's you need that, you know. I you know, Crintron, I think you like it also, right? We need it. But it's just it's just not as
But you don't need it all the time.
During the pandemic, it was very interesting during the pandemic that there were the small shows, the improvised music shows in Zurich, they start very fast. And it was almost like in a church to play there. And this quality of the people, they were so into the music, and also the musicians, it was the best time to play this music, you know. Because the people, they want to go out, they were open, they were not also so smashed by sound because there were no traffic, they were so silent. And right now I feel that people get extremely, again, in stress, and it doesn't help for improvised music in this way.
Mm.
You have to scream, especially also with Spotify. You know, everything gets loud, you know, and if you want to be, loudness is one thing.
How do you find other people like you? You seem to be very good at wherever you go, seeking out other artists to collaborate with, and you seem like very talented at networking. Maybe it's not intentional, but I'm just curious, or do like-minded people just sort of gravitate
to one another? I think they come to you. That's the thing. It's the chemical thing. You know, Moose Jackson example, it was in the High Hole. No, it is Always Lounge. So it was, it was just energy and this, you know. So,
What's next? Tell us about Indonesia.
So, next I would like, thank you. It's super happy. I have some shows. You see that on my website. So the 8th is very nice. The 6th is with Helen. Also, I'm happy. Lens. The 4th, it's also with Helen here in the garden, perhaps, or here, I don't know. And then the High Hole Lounge, twice again, with Mike Dillon and Ellicott. And then the with Brad Walker and Helen. Yeah. So, that's it.
And that's all in the next couple of weeks.
Yeah. And the 15th, I have to go back. Yeah.
And then what?
Christmas. I have some shows in Switzerland. And then I decide to not to be in Berlin. I want to be some weeks in Berlin, but I go to Indonesia, to my school, because I think it's not the time to be in Europe right now with the gas crisis and everything.
Mm.
And I want to develop myself and work on the Stones. I do not have a record with the Stones, and I will really do something right now. And this was extremely interesting to me to arrive with the Stones in Indonesia to play 5 million years old Stones with gamelan instruments together, and it fits perfect.
Hmm.
And with even in the jungle, sitting in the jungle, and you have all these insects, and they and you start to play, and then you stop, and they still going on. And so just to sit in the jungle and recording Icelandic Stones with insects, perhaps. And I think during the pandemic I saw many artists, they were talking about that a lot of people start to listen just to nature sounds.
Yeah.
And this, because it's too much for our brain right now, to listen all the time Spotify and blah, blah, blah. And this leads me also to some kind of natural beats, you know, nature and myself, you know, me and the nature and me, stuff like that.
Yeah, I found over the lockdown, and I know a lot of people felt the same way. I mean, I kind of reconnected with nature in a way. I just had to get out of the house, and that, by virtue of what we could do, it was just sort of being outside. Curious. You kind of touched on it a little bit, but most of the artists I know, actually, the lockdown was very good for them because they got to just be uninterrupted and no deadlines and no pressure and time to just make things. I'm curious how your lockdown time was, and I know like this drawing practice kind of emerged formally from that. So just speak on that a little bit.
The one thing that came to me, because it was really cold, I didn't have a shower, I had nothing, it's just a bed, a drums, and a camping thing.
That's
so
hardcore.
I started to, and it's getting really cold, and so I was chopping wood every morning and to heat my apartment, and then the heat getting suddenly so important to me, and so I started to put 2 o'clock in the night, you know, just take paper and put it on the oven and start to watch paper, and then it starts to burn, you know, and then I said take the next paper and put it on and then start to play drums, so until it starts to burn, you know, take it away, away, and then you have this hidden structures in the burning paper. So this what it means, you know, also to deal with time and heat, an example, or movement and notation stuff. It's just some a phenomenon which I think I have it from as a child. You know, you see water, you know, so